The Dante Club is a new novel by a young man named Matthew Pearl. He went to Harvard, then to law school at Yale, and while in law school, he wrote this book, which is his first novel. It's what reviewers call a literary thriller. Roughly, that means that there are violent crimes, but the characters speak in complete sentences and words of more than one syllable. And in fact, in this book, they are fictional versions of great figures of American literature. The poets Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, James Russell Lowell, Oliver Wendell Holmes, the father of Justice Holmes, that is, and their publisher, J.T. Fields of the firm Tickner and Fields. Matthew Pearl, the sort of plot of the book is that the poets find themselves connected to a particularly horrible murder. Could you tell us about that link without giving too much away?
Absolutely, Linda. What happens is the Dante Club is undertaking the first translation of Dante in America, and that includes Dante's vision of Inferno, or his vision of hell. As they're preparing to finish this massive and groundbreaking work to introduce Dante for the first time to America, they discover that a series of murders has occurred around Boston and Cambridge, where they are, but because they're the first Dante scholars, only they realize that these murders are based on the punishments in Dante's vision of hell.
So right away they understand that if anybody else figures this out, they will be the suspects.
Exactly. They're able to read the murders, so to speak, in a way that no one else can read them, because they have this knowledge that in this sort of mystery fictional story, the knowledge is like the locked mansion where a murder takes place, and you know someone in the mansion has done it. In this case, the locked mansion is this exclusive knowledge of Dante.
So to save themselves and to save the translation of Dante, they have to solve the crime. Now, the Dante Club, the poets, the publisher, and a person I haven't mentioned, George Washington Greene, who was he?
George Washington Greene was a member of the Dante Club. He was an old friend of Longfellow's, and he was actually the person who gave Longfellow his first copy of Dante in Italian in the 1820s while they were both traveling abroad in Paris. He was a Revolutionary War historian, and actually the Revolutionary War had many resonances with what the Dante Club was doing. The Dante Club met every Wednesday evening in Longfellow's house in Cambridge that also happened to have been used by George Washington as his headquarters in the early days of the Revolutionary War.
And if you want to see it, you can see it. It's still there.
Oh, absolutely. It's a National Park Historic Site, and they do a wonderful job of keeping the history alive.
There is a description of a meeting of the Dante Club to work on the translation on page 55. Could you read some part of that for us?
Absolutely. My pleasure.
It starts when they're all gathered in the room and they're kind of laughing and joking, and Longfellow comes in.
"School time," he said softly. The room fell hush. Longfellow closed the green shutters over the windows. Dr. Holmes turned down the flames of the moderator lamps while the others helped arrange a row of candles. This series of overlapping halos communed with the flickering glow of the fire. The five scholars and Trapp, Longfellow's plump Scotch terrier, assumed their preordained posts along the circumference of the small room. Longfellow gathered up a sheaf of papers from his drawer and passed out a few pages of Dante's Italian to each guest, along with a set of printed proof sheets with his corresponding line-by-line translation. In the delicately woven chiaroscuro of hearth, lamp, and wick, the ink seemed to lift off Longfellow's proofs, as if a page of Dante suddenly came alive under one's eyes. Dante had arranged his verse in the terza rima, every three lines a poetic set, the first and third rhyming, and the middle projecting a rhyme with the first line of the next set, so that the verses leaned ahead in forward motion. Holmes always relished how Longfellow opened their Dante meetings with the recitation of the first lines of the Commedia in unassumingly perfect Italian. "Midway through the journey of our life, I found myself within a dark wood, for the right way had been lost."
Now, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow was reckoned by contemporaries to be the greatest poet of his day, and certainly the most popular, but just about all that remains of him now, I suppose, is one if by land, two if by sea, and all the opposite. But he is the great figure in your book.
Absolutely, and part of what I hope the book explores is something we don't expect from Longfellow, something we don't expect from most of these 19th century American poets that we've come to dismiss, or worse, ignore. And that is a daring, literary, aggressive, assertive work. That is the introduction of this astoundingly controversial literature.
Why was it so controversial?
Well, Dante and Italian were wrapped up in the influx of immigrants into the Boston Harbor, into all the American cities.
The Irish and the Italians.
Absolutely. And these were languages, it's sort of the reverse of what we have today, Linda, where the classics departments at universities, the Greek and Latin, have to struggle for their survival. Back then, in the 19th century universities, those were the power structures.
And modern languages were not respected.
Exactly. When professors like Longfellow and James Russell Lull came to colleges like Harvard and said, we're going to teach this, we're going to teach French, Spanish, Italian, they were rebelled against. The establishment recoiled from this because these were the languages of the new immigrants. And in terms of Dante and Italian specifically, the language of Catholicism, which was one of the most frightening and considered poisonous, infectious developments in American culture.
James Russell Lowell, you mentioned, he was a professor of modern languages at Harvard, French and Italian. Most of his poetry is not remembered now, except maybe for one line, what is so rare is a day in June.
Right.
Then if ever come perfect days. In your book, he's a passionate abolitionist. He's very political, and he sees poetry as politics. Is that the way it was?
Yes, actually, James Russell Lowell started one of the original abolitionist literary magazines, essentially, that would publish essays and poems, and was absolutely dedicated to it. And we forget how much, just like Dante, Dante's poem is written in part to change the world, to have an impact on society, on culture, and on politics. Dante was a politician. And so this was part of what the communion was between these 19th century poets and Dante. James Russell Lowell, as an example, was absolutely dedicated to making sure that poetry changed the world and had an impact on the world.
I don't want to leave the impression that this book is heavy. This is not a this is not an 800-page Umberto Eco scary book. It's a very easy, readable, and interesting book. But one of the most conflicted character and one of the most interesting is Oliver Wendell Holmes. He's, of course, now the far less famous father of Chief Justice Oliver Holmes. You picture him as a fairly frantic little guy who was worried about what people think, worried about his own standing in the great literary pantheon that he considered Boston to be. I mean, he was sweating everything.
Yes, and that's how he lived at the time. And in fact, as you mentioned, his legacy lives in the shadow of his son. And that's really how he felt at the time. That's how he felt in 1865 when the novel is set. Because his son, Oliver Wendell Holmes, even then, was this figure of stature. He was a Civil War hero. And also, Dr. Holmes saw himself as someone who couldn't commit to a cause. He was a doctor. He was a professor. He was a writer. He was a poet. He was a translator in the case of the Dante Club. And this was this great love of all knowledge, which he shared with Dante, was something that also plagued him. Because the question is, can you commit yourself when you're doing so many things? And it's Dr. Holmes's fluency both in the physical, in the medical, he was an anatomist, and his fluency in the verbal, in the linguistic, in language, which made him a perfect character to put the most pressure on in the Dante Club.
One of the ways in which the plot of the thriller, the crime-solving, is advanced is that Oliver Wendell Holmes is sort of onto the idea of a serial killer, and he gathers evidence and takes it to some of Harvard's leading scientists to be analyzed, just like
right.
CSI.
Right, pre-CSI, an encounter. He discovers these very special type of maggots, which are fairly frightening and were indeed real and are now more or less extinct. And takes it to Louis Agassiz, who was the leading Harvard botanist and natural scientist. And that's part of what is so wonderful about the setting of this story and the setting of the historical Dante Club is the vast range of disciplines that worked together poetry was not considered the separate, sequestered world. Poetry was part of all disciplines, just as it was for Dante, who wrote essentially an encyclopedia in his poetry of all knowledge in medieval times, and sometimes it seems all knowledge, period.
Matthew Pearl's novel is called The Dante Club. He joined us from NPR West in California. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Linda. It was a pleasure.